And on this week's Redwood Wonk, we're going to discuss Donald Trump's Neville Chamberlain negotiations. We're going to discuss GOP governors sending additional National Guard troops to join ICE in starting with Washington, D.C. and heading out to other cities. And finally, we're going to wrap it up with Donald Trump saying an executive order to take away vote-by-mail ballots. On this week's Redwood Wonk, we're going to discuss Donald Trump's Neville Chamberlain moment. I came back with negotiations. We're all good. The war has ended in Gaza. The war has ended in Ukraine. I alone did it. Except there's one problem. The war is still raging in Gaza, and the war is still raging in Ukraine. Donald Trump sat down with his, I'm going to call him, bitchmaster, Putin, who told Donald Trump, go put on your leather jockstrap and come sit at my knee. That's about how Putin thinks of Trump. Trump thought he got off on the negotiations until they told him, you gave him everything he wanted, and you gave Ukraine nothing. By the way, he negotiated a peace settlement without the two parties there. So the whole world's just scratching their head. The European leaders came in to say, we remember what Russia did in late 30s and late 40s, and you need to stop them before they take over Europe. So your thoughts on this, Dave?
So I addressed this, I guess, when I was considering what happened, more from a realpolitik perspective. So I'll just say, like, I'll start from context that Europe is now in an era of rearmament, military buildup. And that's because people in formerly unfree societies, they recognize what's going on here. And even with the United States being involved, you can revert back to President Ronald Reagan's famous quote, trust but verify. So realistically, what did Trump get? Well, there's no sanctions. There's no consequences. Putin's officially out of isolation. So what I heard one GOP strategist say, like one of those people who apparently put the mask down for a minute, they said that we all saw the pageantry that the Trump team rolled out for the warmonger. Yeah. And the belligerent, the person who is building up troops all along the border with various NATO countries, the belligerent that invaded Ukraine. I mentioned this to Eric last week that really you almost have to separate out our U.S. media based perspective from what many other people, how many other countries are seeing it. And realistically, we live in Trump's world now, right? And he he's going to start from Putin's original demands. And he's going to say, this is what the powerful player here at the table. And I don't want to overstate the case, but there are some that think that Trump really just has no experience, insights, or ability, capacity to really be involved in diplomacy. But that train, left the station. He's who we have.
Can I bring something up there too?
Absolutely.
When the U.S. negotiated with Vietnam to try to end that war, Nixon didn't fly over to France for negotiations. His Secretary of State, Henry Kissinger, did. That was not the president's job responsibility. They had envoys, ambassadors doing back channel talks left and right. But it was mainly the Secretary of State doing the talking. With Donald Trump, it always has to be him front and center. If you remember COVID, it wasn't the doctors doing the daily thing on how do we survive COVID. It's Dr. Trump, who has zero medical or scientific background, telling us how to survive COVID by injecting sun bleach. What the hell? Now he's trying to tell the world that he alone can decide a negotiations for Russia and Ukraine.
Yeah, and I think this is in part what some people have called a malignant narcissism. And I think that it comes with the territory here at this point. But let's kind of take a step back. And, I know we're framing this as somewhat a Trump-centric prism. But let's even look at how former Senator, Secretary of State Marco Rubio, some of the things that he's said over the last few days. They broke out NBC Meet the Press played a recording of Rubio saying that Putin is a professional serial liar. That's why we need an enforceable mechanism for a security guarantee. It's words backed by action. It has to be, and he used this quote, enforceable, verifiable, and enduring. And he actually said that there's some, I don't think he used the word hope, but there's a, you know, he called it a big deal that the war has been stalemated. And with President Trump's intervention, it appears that Putin might accept a meeting with President Zelensky. And he also recognized the importance of peacekeeping security guarantees. And we can unpack that a little bit. I think those are the basic, you know, at least two out of the four basic elements of what's going to happen going forward. The question is, how much of this is Putin's political theater of his own and his own self-interest that he's playing to, you know, President Trump's ego here? And
I think Zelensky's end game is he wants entry into NATO so that if Putin decides to break the truce, all of Europe will come to Ukraine's aid. That's what I think his thing is. And then if that happens, they're going to look at the United States going, we just got attacked again on a peace treaty that you brokered. What are you going to do, United States?
So I'm game to unpack that a little bit, but I think it's worth mentioning that, you know, it's that the devil's in the details on that one. But the elephant in the room here is the concession of territorial, you know, handover. And I think that's the big problem.
Putin wants Alaska back. So I think that'll keep him happy. And I'm sure Trump would be happy to give up a state. That's a joke, by the way.
So it's funny because I haven't, you know, I guess it's worth mentioning. This is the first time you and I have kind of connected on this show. And I'm just not used to Eric's not as, it doesn't have quite the zingers. Our other co-host that I've worked with for a few years now, he doesn't have the zingers. So this is actually, you know, it's gallows humor, I know, because the fate of a country is at stake. But I guess if you don't have satire, resilience requires a sense of humor. So
wait till you mention the word Congress, and I'll have to correct you on that sitting. I'm sorry, Dave. You must be confused that you think we have a Congress.
Yeah, I haven't heard that one yet. But
it's coming.
If you have any questions or comments, email us at redwoodwonk@gmail.com.
Listen to Rub and Wonk on KZZH 96.7 FM every Tuesday and Thursday night at 8 p.m.
Yeah, I mean, for real, right? So there's the capitulation of let's bring that up. Let's mention Congress here. So one of the elements that supposedly brought Putin to the table was that our Congress, I think it started in the Senate, and I think that there's enough votes there to pass, is willing to put in place these secondary sanctions that could, in theory, really set back the relationship between the United States and India if there was a sanctions on the oil they're importing from Russia. I think it's about 4 million barrels a day. It's a huge amount of oil, 4 million barrels a day. And so that would be, if they really did put sanctions on there, $60 a barrel at some significant percentage, that would be an immense amount of a burden on India.
It would cripple Russia's already weak economy. They have a 25% unemployment right now, a huge alcoholism problem, and their GDP is less than Italy's, and they have more than 20 times Italy's population. So they've got an economy that's in the tank. Most all their money is going into the military. If you understand the thing about bullets and butter, once you shoot a bullet, that's gone. You just spent the money on it. You don't get a return on that investment. It's gone. So and the other thing, too, is the young males in Russia between the ages of 17 and 30 have left the country because they don't want to be, I shouldn't say drafted. They have like their military conscripts. There is like our ICE agents. They grab a guy and say, you're now drafted. Bye. Show up tomorrow or we come arrest you. So they've got a huge problem in that country right now.
I mean, and
that isn't even talking about the birth rate thing. When you have the young males leave your country, guess what happens to the women? They don't have babies.
I mean, a couple features of what you've talked about, details. They are also putting in place immense incentives to pay people to go to the front lines. And then they're putting them into a set of tactics that could arguably lead to a very quick end of their life.
Here's a $10,000 bonus. You'll be dead in 5 weeks.
Right.
Do you want to sign up for that?
Yeah, not great. So I guess at this point, I do want to take a little bit. We're not going to get into the details, of course, but Russia has done okay, I would argue, navigating the current sanctions regime. It didn't lead to collapse. I mean, their country is not in a good place. The interest rates are 18%, and as long as the oligarchs and are willing to, you know, continue donating significant portions of their GDP to the military budget, and the country and all the, you know, political leaders in the Duma are willing to devote so much of their budget to, you know, the meat grinder of it's almost like World War I in a sense, where there's a line of control. The progress that Russia has made over the first 9 months of the war got them about 20% of Ukraine's territory. But in the last, you know, all the subsequent years since, they've only gained maybe 1 more percent, actually a little bit less. So really, it's just been a meat grinder. People have referred it to, you know, it's a terrible way.
It cost 1.2 million casualties and alleged 300,000 to 400,000 dead and the other 800,000 wounded. That's just.
Yeah.
Word gets out in your country. Where's Ivan? I haven't seen Ivan in a while. He ain't coming home.
Yeah. And I mean, you know, the ongoing damage and harm to the civilian population of Ukraine, too. Since Trump's taken office, I do think we could pivot back to the treaty itself or potential treaty. Since Trump's taken office, the amount of missiles and drones that have, you know, Russia's been sending out every month has doubled approximately. At one point, they were doing about 3,000 attacks per month. Now it's like 6,000 per month. Sites. And most
women and children and seniors. So
we can say
right now there's a humanitarian problem right now, both in Gaza and in Ukraine.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And Trump has not done anything with either of them, even though he promised us he's going to end both wars on day one in office. Well, looks like he lied.
Well, so part of this is, can he end the war? And I think he thinks he can in Ukraine. And then the question is Putin really a partner for peace? And obviously, that's not how Putin frames himself. Putin is a belligerent, like we said, who's got, like I said, a finite list of demands. And so the only way that Trump could conceivably bring us to a ceasefire, the whole conflict to a ceasefire, would have been for Putin to stop, and he won't commit to a ceasefire. So he's gotten into Trump's head that instead we go for a full blown peace treaty. And I think our European allies, you know, they did come together to display solidarity and really just kind of put some red lines down for Trump to kind of understand a little bit, right? That they, you know, there are certain things. The truth is that, you know, back in the very beginning of this conflict, Zelensky appealed for a no-fly zone back in February of 2022. And he said, if not now, when? If you will not do it, will you give us the planes to make it a reality? And both Europe and the United States rejected that at the time. Jens Stoltenberg was a former NATO Security Secretary General. And the United States, too, agreed. They did not want to escalate into the potential for World War III. But the facts on the ground have changed. Millions of casualties later. So maybe that we're taking another bite at this apple. People have described it as the least bad of the bad options. Could a peace, you know, a cold peace be put forward? And if it was, can we spell out ahead of time all of the implications of what that would mean? In other words, we're really talking about the security guarantees. What does that look like? Who's involved? And would the United States really step up or not? And I think, to me, that's, I'll let you kind of take a, you know, put some input in here, but the truth is that Trump has said no U.S. boots on the ground. He said we do have some air resources, and obviously intelligence and satellite and weapons manufacturing and other things that he's hinted at. But the question is, can Europe really take care of things on their own when it comes to materiel and manpower? So I mean, before I kind of go into that, I guess, you know, I would just say at a high level, I think Russia, it seems like they want to drag out treaty preparations. They're saying, well, it's due to the complexity of the details. And people are saying, will Putin even meet with Zelensky? And that's, he's potentially unwilling to meet with him. So in addition to the territorial concessions, in addition to having to spell out security guarantees, there's also that Putin demand no membership in NATO. So there's this coalition of the willing European 30 countries. There's those seven principles that showed up at the White House on Monday. We can talk about, but the truth is that this other element, Putin talks about ending the denazification. From Western ears, we're like, what is he even talking about?
He just makes up stuff.
No, I mean Putin though. Putin's saying that denazification.
Right. He's doing it. Trump. He's just making up stuff to deflect.
Yeah, yeah.
You know the whole reason Trump's going on a new thing every day, so we don't talk about the Epstein files. That's all it is. What we really want to know is where's the Epstein files and who was in them. By the way, Pam Blondie, our Chief Justice there, Attorney General said, your name's all over these files. And frankly, Trump has more pictures with Epstein than he does with Melania. So I want the Epstein files, damn it.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's going to be a hot button political issue every month until something changes. And this is like I think you might rightfully be able to say that any of this distraction, any of this, what's it called? A projection could be to change the narrative on that. So I think you hit the nail on the head that's his like fatal flaw, especially if he plans on like bending the path of history to have a third regime in 2028. He has to figure out how to resolve these claims that he is a degenerate and arguably worse. So he wants to say I solved resolve these enduring conflicts around the world as projection for sure. But go ahead.
Do we know anyone who's an Uncle Pervy pedo who went backstage at Miss Teen pageants to watch teenagers getting dressed? That's just weird. I'm sorry, and he admitted to doing it. So, yeah.
Yeah, it's pretty awful. I mean, the more you look, the grosser it gets. Like, there's nothing good to be said about any of that. And I guess, I mean, you know, it's not really relevant to our topic for now, other than to say that, you know, any day, like each day, you never know. Anytime Trump is speaking, you just never know what's going to actually come out. So actually, if you don't mind, I'll pivot back to the treaty, supposedly, and that denazification claim. I mentioned this last week with Eric that Seymour Hersh, who's been really good about getting leaks the Pentagon since the My Lai massacre back during the Vietnam War, he's got connections in the Pentagon and he's very he's articulate about them. And I would say his track record's pretty tight. So one of the things that he has published is that the United States and the Pentagon and the West has already decided that Zelensky will have to, you know, cede power. And so that first claim that Putin wants, the denazification of whatever the hell that actually means, in reality, I think that the West will do an appeasement, or has already made the decision to appease
power, you
on
mean
that
a
level.
Coup.
Not a coup. So Zelensky's got martial law in place. He's not had an election. His term is ended. And so a return to normalcy would include an election. Okay. And so that would by definition mean, a change of leadership. They've already changed their foreign minister, their prime minister, their ambassador to the United States. The government was already starting to question a lot of Zelensky's policies internally with respect to, criminality, corruption, oligarchic skimming off the economy, lack of accountability for him and his
Trump
team.
Trump and Zelensky there.
Zelensky.
Are you sure? Because what you just said sounded an awful lot like Trump. How much can I grift off the American public here?
Well, I think Trump's a personal grifter. I think Ukraine's known for having sort of an oligarchic hand in the pie. CBS actually had to have one of their documentaries pulled before it went public because they tracked the money. And this was during the beginning of the war. So it's obviously, you know, it's a little bit deeper than what we're, you know, it's a little bit out of scope for what we're talking about now. But just to the point is that if you think about it, they've already, from what Seymour Hersh has said, the West has already determined who will likely be his successor. It's a former general who's an ambassador to London, ambassador to the UK. And so in a way, like, Putin's already gotten one check of two checks, really. He's getting the territory at the line of control, so he won't get all the way to the full footprint of all four of those oblasts, you know, the Ukrainian territory that will be Russian satellite states or, you know, territories. So I think the West would concede to the territoriality if Ukraine would, but it would have to go to a referendum. The country would have to vote on it, and it would have to be, you know, plus, plus, plus. I think that's the most bitter pill to swallow. I think our intelligence community, our military, does not want that. Our media, our political elite, our academy, most Western-minded people that have, you know, our values, Western values, American values, we just do not want to see that happen. But in realpolitik would say, you know, I think I mentioned this last week, Henry Kissinger once said that Crimea is an existential, existential reality for Moscow. They when they took it, he advised that President Obama not push back because that's their warm water port. For Russia, all things being equal, that was considered something the West could tolerate. But now, who knows? Like, I would say that the line in the sand is no more. Like, on the ground, and I, you know, it's not me. I'm not in the room. I don't know. But my prediction is that if they do decide to give up this territoriality, and they do decide to change leadership, what's left is the security agreements. And if Putin is saying, well, it can't be NATO, and the West is saying, well, what the hell else would it be? What could it be? Well, they've put forward, they've already said, you know, Germany will take the lead, the UK, France,
Italy, Finland.
Italy, and also Finland showed up at the meeting, as well as the EU and NATO. So what Finland was doing there, I think, is Finland was actually, and sorry to keep talking, I'll give you some feedback here, but I'll let you have a chance for feedback. But I think it's interesting about Finland. They've got the longest border with Russia, you know, in all of the EU and all of NATO, over 800 miles. They've got a long record. They had, you know, decades of neutrality after World War II. And when the USSR militarized the border, it wasn't because for attacking Finland. It was to prevent their own citizens from defecting to freedom. Right.
They already attacked Finland in the Winter War of 1938 anyway.
Exactly that. Right. So you kind of read my mind. You know exactly where I was going with this. And that, you know, the president of Finland, Stubb, he said that there's a key lesson here. We, of course, have our own historical experience with Russia from World War II, the Winter War, and the War of Continuation. And if I look at the silver lining of where things stand right now, we did find a solution in 1944, and I'm sure we'll be able to find the solution in 2025. So again, all things being equal, I know it's the hardest pill to swallow for everybody that I know. I have friends and colleagues in Ukraine, and they don't want to hear this, right? But the truth is that if we could guarantee peace, we would just, the way to do that is to spell out what the commitments are from those 30 people, those 30 countries who have said they would step up. And what would be the role of the United States?
Here's your territory. Ukraine goes to NATO. And if Putin decides to attack again, we may be looking at World War III.
Yeah, it is. I mean, we're already looking at the potential for World War III. We've all been flirting with this. I think a lot of people, so you and I, Matthew, like, we don't have a long record of communicating about these complex things. But one of the things that I say to people, we're talking about domestic politics, talking about the United States, is that I think apathy, meaning I don't care, I'm looking away, is a rational response to the absurdity of politics. If you really don't think you can control things, and you really don't think that our leaders are leaders and that they're both parties, a pox on both your houses. You're broken and you're driving us in the wrong direction on a regular basis. If that's what you think, of course, it's great for your self-preservation to look away. But the reality is that World War III has been flirted with anytime Putin really opens his mouth and he says, yeah, if you piss me off, I could just take out a European capital. And who knows if he would? Who knows what we would do? But the idea, you know, I guess I know I said I would let you talk, and I'm sorry, but I'll say one more thing, and then I'll hand it over. I promise. Back when Ronald Reagan said trust but verify, George Shultz actually went on Meet the Press. You know, he's like one of those sort of godfathers of realism, realpolitik, from back during the Reagan administration. I think the George Shultz School of, you know, foreign policy or something at Stanford, like he's an icon in conservative thought, former Secretary of State. He said there were intense discussions during that time period. But despite the differences, he said to his counterparts in Soviet Union, we can both blow up the world. So we need a stable and constructive relationship. That doesn't exist now with Russia. We don't have a stable or a constructive relationship. And, you know, if there's going to be kind of a Nixon goes to China moment, that maybe that's the benefit of what happened on Friday. Trump said, okay, look, you know, Putin, you fly over to Alaska. We have a shared history there. We're going to have a shared future. You know, that we might have a world war in the future fighting about Arctic energy reserves. We might have a world war about some of these borders. Who knows? But for now, let's try to stop this war. So, I mean, there is a silver lining to a certain extent. And I know I've been talking a lot. So any feedback on any of that stuff that I said?
Well, also, I want to pivot over to what's happening here domestically with a lot of the subjects you brought up. This week, the many Republican governors are now sending National Guard troops to Washington, D.C. Even though it's got lower crime rates than many red states do, I'm not sure why they're not sending National Guard units to Alabama or Tennessee or Kentucky. I would like to see that happen first. But the whole idea is Trump wants to militarize. He wants to get rid of the Posse Comitatus Act, bring the U.S. military inside domestic United States cities to show power. And ultimately, I think he wants to quell any civil disturbance or disobedience, possibly with live round. A friend of mine and I were talking, one of the biggest fears we have in this coming year is Kent states occurring all across America, where the United States military opens fire on unarmed civilians doing peaceful protest. And that's the fear of what's going on. Right now, the biggest weapon citizens have is their cell phones. They can just record what's happening right now. And they've been doing this and it's going viral left and right. What's happening out there as, you know, six guys in unnamed, you can't tell what unit they're with. Are they with Homeland Security? Are they with DC police? Are they with ICE? We don't know. They just dressed up like they're going to some military thing. Six guys tackling one guy and throwing him to the ground. And people are sitting around going, what the hell are you guys doing? All you need is one guy on this guy. You're all bigger than he is. And then they have great moments where they said, you know, you guys are ruining America right now. And one guy turned and commented, oh, the liberals already did that. And everyone started laughing at the guy going, okay, so you're not that bright. I guess you were a mall security guard 2 weeks ago. And now they're giving you a big pay raise, put you on all these goon uniforms, giving you a rifle and said, go after them libtards and beat them up. And if you have to, shoot them. That's our fear, what's going to happen. Your thoughts on that, David?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a justifiable fear in the sense that the escalation in funding for these teams has, I've heard lots of different numbers. I've read a few different sources. We're talking over $100 billion,
maybe as much, billion.
$140, some has even said $170 billion. I mean, so we're talking real money. We're talking the potential for tragedy and harm. So it's there's, you know, from the way I look at it, two things. There's this theory, you know, there's this concept of countervailing power, which basically means like the more power asserts itself offensively, you know, and creates the conditions of trauma and harm and resentment and resistance, that will galvanize support for forces that are going to counterbalance them, basically. That's the countervailing part, right? So that this is just what happens. So, like, for example, I know this is a weird example, but people are like, what are you even talking about? And I said, there's historic examples of a car falling on a person, and like a grandma comes over and picks it up so that the grandchild can get out from under the car. Like, where does that power come from? We don't know. How did the United States beat, you know, the British Empire, you know, the King of England in our Revolutionary War? Where did that power come from? You know, it's unknowable, actually. It's an amazing part of the human condition. But with respect to ICE, it just goes so against our values that I want to take a half step back. You know, during the time before Trump took office, there were already studies being done. Like, the American Civil Liberties Union of Northern California did an analysis of all of the the facilities in California called resistance, retaliation, repression. It looked at 2 years of what we already had in place, our status quo. And they found I'm going to give you the examples here. All six of the ICE detention facilities are run by private for-profit prison companies. There's a lack of accountability. There's a lack of scrutiny. I don't need to call out those two companies. You could look them up, but they're very profitable, and the incentives are there. And they have it. Here's the quote. There's an extensive record of inhumane conditions inside the facilities, fought to publicize, that the ACLU has fought to publicize, including hazardous facilities, medical neglect, harassment, deprivation, abuse, solitary confinement, and sexual assault. So that's already what we've got. And then so now we have troops. You mentioned a few of the agencies, but there's like six or more agencies out there.
We don't know.
Right. And so, you know, there's the question of, like, if you look at, you know, if you listen to Stephen Miller and you say, some people think there are millions of people here that need to be removed. That's the perspective. And that, so Trump is getting from his supporters, from his base, he's getting the benefit of the doubt that this is how you do it. You put in place violent, extremist shock troops to
militarized.
Yeah. I mean, it's ugly stuff that we're seeing on a daily basis. You mentioned people getting the video cameras out to show it. But you know, what's the consequence of that? And this is just in its infancy. This has only been happening for a few months now. You're seeing community organizing. You're seeing legal challenges. You're seeing direct actions aimed at disrupting or preventing ICE operations. And this may have a lasting impact. And, you know, I'll give you some of these and I'll let you give me some feedback. What could some of these lasting, you know, what's the trauma that's coming through our TV screens and our phones every day? You know, rounding up they're shooting for 3,000 people a day. I think they're getting about 1,000 people a day from June and July data. So there is they cast the net way too wide, far beyond the justification of targeting criminals. It's inhumane treatment during the encounters. It's intimidation and violence of U.S. citizens who happen to be there, including people that are just observing. There's a lack of due process throughout, from the moment that they're picked up to the moment that they're deported. There's expedited procedural shortcuts. And they're just all of this on the flimsy piece of paper that's an administrative order. That's not legally binding. None of these orders are, for the most part, these administrative orders are not judicial orders. They do not have the weight of law. It is really something that is just, people don't really know how to stop this flood of authoritarianism. So your thoughts on what people are experiencing in the streets, and then you know, how these optics may have lasting impact.
If you have any questions or comments, email us at redwoodwonk@gmail.com.
You can listen to Redwood Wonk on KZZH 96.7 FM every Tuesday and Thursday night at 8 p.m. Well, I see the biggest thing out there is when Trump said, we're going to go after the criminals and the violent rapists and the murderers. American citizens are like, great, get rid of them. I'm all for that. they're going after grandmas. They're going after the lady on the corner selling fruit. They're going after the guys in the Home Depot. They call them El Mosquitos. They show up just to be hired as day laborers. They're going after guys in car washes. I've said this before, and part of the problem I have with Donald Trump, he thinks the biggest threat to the United States is not an Arab coming over here with a dirty bomb. He thinks the biggest threat is a guy named Jose who's got a leaf blower down in Pasadena. So we think different things. And in his mind, he's 100%, I'm going to get that Jose guy out of here. He's here illegally. He's out there doing landscaping, you know, barely getting by on his family, but we got to get rid of him. He's the danger to the United States. And everyone's going, what are you talking about? If you live in a major city, especially if you do anything in the hospitality industry, travel, hotels, restaurants, bars, airports, there's a huge amount of immigrants that work in those businesses, especially in urban cities. If you go to Las Vegas and say, we're going to get rid of all the illegal immigrants who are working housekeeping, no room is going to get cleaned. They know that. No, there's not going to be a single restaurant that's going to have clean dishes. So we know where they are, but they work. Not all of them, I'm going to grind you that, but I would say 95% of them work, and they work hard. They show up on time because they don't want to get deported. So that's my thoughts. I agree with you. You're just going to be pissing off the general citizenship who looks at these people going, these are the guys I run into every day. Their kids go to school with my kids. They're not bad people. So.
Yeah. So one in 10 people, I think, in California are not born here. Like it's a big number.
I would have said it's a lot higher than that. I would have said at least 15%.
Yeah. So the amount of people that are engaged in, and you're right, it's a different number. I'm sorry. Maybe we cut that out. I got that wrong. It's a big number. Of the people that ICE are detaining, based on some preliminary data, it looked like only 1 in 10 had any criminal records at all. And then if you look at, that was the thought I had on, and then if you look at how many of them are violent or gang related, it's like a tiny fraction of that. So it really is misplacing the fear and the response to that fear. It's not benefiting the people the way that the claims are out there. And I think maybe we can pivot. I know we don't have a ton of time left, but one of the things that you mentioned that we should address is that these governors are sending more National Guard troops into DC as a test city, and that maybe coming soon to other cities around the country.
Los Angeles, Chicago, New York City, Atlanta. If they've got a Democratic governor and God forbid they're black, they're going there.
And this is during a time, you know, the claim is that security and cleanliness, there's a public safety emergency. But the reality on the ground is that we are at a 30-year low in violent crime. So nobody's in favor of crime. And I know that from a political perspective, you're always going to need law and order. You're always going to need to support your local police department, sheriff's department. And because when something happens on your doorstep, you pick up the phone and you call 911. But we're not talking about that. We're not talking about vilifying the police. We're not talking about not believing, not supporting in community safety. What we're talking about is it a national emergency? Is it a public safety emergency? Or is that just kind of the nature of urban life, that there are some crimes and that we need to do better, right?
Once again, if we look over here at all the problems in D.C., don't talk about the Epstein files. Right. It's just his latest thing to let's put up the mirror. We're going to look in the mirror, not the Epstein files.
And then the other thing is due process, right? Again, if it's the case that you want to clear out the homelessness in the parks and the public spaces in the nation's capital, I don't think anybody's going to disagree that you should figure out a plan for dealing with homelessness. Where are they going to go? And is the best thing to do to stick a piece of paper to the side of a tent that says the National Guard's going to put all your stuff in a dumpster at 10 o'clock tomorrow? That's not leadership. You know,
in the mega world, they like that. Just get them out of my sight. If they did that here in Eureka, they would applaud the Eureka mayor if she got the homeless out of our sight. I don't care where they go. I just don't want to see them. 90% of people would be in favor of that. Just fact.
Yeah, I mean, so it's like I actually did see some Republican leaning commentators on a show. It was three women. They're intellectuals. They work for different political leaders and different think tanks, etc. And what they were saying is, hey, everybody we know wants the crime to be reduced. We all like having more of a footprint of law enforcement. So maybe there is a more of a moderate right acceptability, like you described, people that are sort of center left, center right, you know, that they're like, maybe they give Trump a little bit of a more of a benefit of the doubt than he deserves here. But the truth is that even the mayor herself in D.C. said more manpower would be helpful. But they're not deploying that manpower to areas in the city that would benefit from increased law enforcement. They're really, it's more performative. It's more theatrics. And they're going to areas of the city. It's a show of force. So it's performative rallying of the base.
Performance art.
Yeah. It's so I heard it said that, you know, from this visual presence only, it's really deployed to high profile areas, landmarks, postcard locations, tourist destinations. These are already arguably some of the safest areas in DC. So it's not directly addressing the issue that they're claiming to address. And it's throwing out the baby with the bathwater when you then go ahead and don't give people the protections of the due process of law so that we could do this in an orderly, humane way that's consistent with our values.
That's not the MAGA way, dude. Just lastly, we need to pivot to the final thing. Trump's latest executive order this week. He wants to get rid of vote by mail ballots and all election machines because they're fraudulent. And that's the only reason he lost the 2020 election. Of course, he cannot name one single ballot for Joe Biden that was fraudulent. He can't name one. He just comes out and says generalized statements. And of course, it goes in Fox News and all the people watching Newsmax, Fox and what's the other crazy show, America Online or whatever. They all
America
believe whatever
One Network, AON.
Yeah, AON, there you go. They all believe anything they're told. They don't read, they don't fact check anything. I vote by mail and have for the last 12 years, mainly because of convenience. I get my ballot in the mail and literally that night I fill it up and it's out. And then about a week or two later, the elections office sends me an email saying, hey, we received your ballot. So I've got a legal ballot. We're good to go. I guess why, in Trump's mind, he's still trying to come up with reasons why he lost the 2020 election. Besides, 7 million more people voted for Biden than him, because mainly due to the clown show during COVID, if nothing else. Just people said, who is this guy? And then, of course, when he got COVID and he was trying to tell everyone, it's not a big thing. Don't worry about it. It can't affect you. He nearly died. So he's using that also as why Jesus is looking out over him. Not only did he survive COVID and he survived the assassin's bullet by a half inch, he's got God's hand looking down over him.
And
in his mind, he can't do anything wrong.
I have spoken with people who actually, that's what they believe, that there's that things happen for a reason and that this is the vessel. He's imperfect, but he's the vessel. I've also spoken to conservatives who think that, it's they're so frustrated with the way things were that they're willing to stomach just about anything.
Can't tell you what they don't like that things were. Yes, we had the worst inflation. The whole world did. Yes, the price of eggs went up. And there was 10 trans athletes trying to play as women who are actually men. I should say started off as men. 10 in the entire country. So that was the whole thing this election went on. Egg prices and 10 trans athletes. Just insane. Can you name a single policy that Trump does to make America's lives better? One.
Well, I mean, rather than go down that road, I appreciate the challenge. But I'd say, because I'd like to speak to the mail-in balloting. He mentioned that, hey, even Vladimir Putin told me it's because of these ballots. That's why I lost. And it's like,
Putin's
dude,
such an honest guy.
That is not the guy you should be referencing. But the truth is, he also said that this is what Trump said, that we might be the only country that does this. No, we're not. Most of the countries on that stage, when he said it, those leaders knew that their countries have mail-in ballots too. And in fact, the state of Oregon and the state of Utah, they're 100% mail-in. 100%. Yeah. So we have a system in place. And if you ask our community's very own elections officials, they'll tell you great scrutiny goes into identifying each and every ballot. And in fact, that's why California takes so long, is because we give weeks for our officials, our representatives, to scrutinize every ballot and go back and ask people and try to rectify the situation. I don't have to get into it. The truth is that mail-in balloting, it works. And we don't need to take advice from Putin on this. And it's not.
You didn't just say that, did you?
No, I didn't. I didn't, you know, I'm making the joke like you do. So is there going to be a push, right? I don't know if you saw that documentary, 10,000 Mules. It just was talking about vote bundling. Dinesh D'Souza, it's been widely trashed.
Debunked.
Yeah. It was, you know, you and I aren't going to adjudicate that here, but that's what people believed because they watched the documentary, and in their peer groups and their peer circles, it was amplified. And
they
the media
saw one clip on Fox News, and that proved that the 2020 election was stolen because some guy was hanging out near a mailbox just putting these ballots in there.
Yeah. I should put it out. We've seen that every lawsuit that tried to find a single problem found none. And if you look, you know, the guy who was Trump's head, I think his last name's Krebs, the election security guy.
Krebs.
Yeah, he said this is one of the safest and most successful elections.
And yeah. I'll go back to Maricopa County, Arizona. They counted, they ran the ballots through the machine, Biden won. They ran them back through the machine again, Biden won again. Then they did that crazy ninja, not the Ninja Turtles, the secret ninjas or whatever the hell that guy was, where they spent 6 weeks hand counting every ballot in Maricopa County, and they found even more ballots for Biden, and he won again when they counted the paper ballots. People don't realize you have to run the ballot through the machine, but you still have a piece of paper there. When they hand counted the paper ballots, Biden won again. Then they had a real hard time trying to spin that on Fox News.
Yeah. And like, so, I mean, I've talked to folks who think, well, we've got all these illegal people here. They must be voting. And the truth is they're not. Not one. No. And if you look at like every case of that has ever, I think it's the Brennan Center who studies these things. And if you look at, you know, every case of fraud has been something like a person in Florida who thought she had her right to vote when she was a convicted felon who is now out of jail, or a person in Texas. I saw a person in Texas. I think their grandmother was dying and in the hospice. And so they said, can you vote for me? So yes, it's a non-zero event when people vote on behalf of other people or they're not eligible to vote.
We're talking 1,000 votes out of 150 million.
So yes, if that
percentage is like,
yeah, and it could be like 10. You know, I mean, it's like it's so few people. But we're living in a time now where people don't trust experts, and if you say, well, you know, this team of people that devote their life to free and fair elections have studied it for years, and they go, well, they should have a job. Why did we let experts count votes and study this for years? Like, they should have a real job. You can't just dismiss the entire profession, I guess, is what I was going to say there. So,
well, you can't if they don't come to the conclusion you like. Then you just dismiss them. If the Bureau of Labor Statistics comes out with a number you don't like, fire the person. That's where we're at today.
Oh, no. Yeah, that's a whole nother ballgame. Or instead of having monthly reporting of jobs, do it quarterly. And like, just if you don't like the data, bend the curve of reality. I mean, it's a tragic excuse for leadership.
All right, David, are you ready to get into predictions?
Yes, I am.
Go ahead. I'll let you go first. What's your prediction we can look forward to?
So we are now experiencing gerrymandering here in California. and it's in response to Texas gerrymandering. By that, I mean redrawing district lines. So my thought on this is that this may lead to unintended consequences. Firstly, Nate Silver did an analysis that shows that in Texas, 3 out of 5 of those districts are likely to point to GOP control. But there are assumptions about the 2 border districts that may not play out as predicted. So similarly, other states may be going along with this plan out of inertia, but they're still going to potentially run into conflict with reality on the ground. So one of the things that Nate said was 2024 could be a high watermark for GOP performance in purple states and communities. And what I mean by that is Latino voters may not respond the same way they did now that there's been all these ICE raids, or now that there's been all these DOGE cuts, losses of jobs and projects, lost government funding, employees and contractors in Northern Virginia. That's going to have an impact on the governor's race, the Virginia governor's race, plus inflation. Trump was pretty far ahead on inflation for a while, but now he's underwater. His performance, right? 25% underwater. That's a 34% swing in just, 6 months. So while there might be some impact on the election outcomes from these lines, jurisdictional lines being redrawn, it's going to be less predictable than we think and probably less determinative than things appear right now.
My prediction is we're going to start to see some names coming out from the Epstein files. We're going to see all the names but one. They're going to hide one name and put just a big black thing through it. They're going to redact Trump's name throughout the Epstein files. We're going to start to see other names come out. And hopefully they go after some of these people. That's what I want to see. The problem is there's 2 sets of justice in this country. There's rich people's justice and there's poor people's justice. If you're a billionaire, you're going to probably get a lawyer, stall the thing out and say it wasn't me, it was fake news. But I'd just like to see some of the stuff come out. And I think the vast majority of the country does, whether you're Democrat or Republican. That's all the Republicans talked about the past 2 years is the Epstein files. You have them. Let's see them. Nope, we're not going to show it to you.
It'll be interesting to see what happens.
That's my prediction. Let's see if any of these predictions come true. In the meantime, please stay informed, stay engaged, and thank you for watching or listening to us. Until next week.